Comments on Serotalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deaf-blind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. Welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat 99 for April 28, 2011. This is Michael Loft, and tonight's topic is This Month in Access Technology for April 2011. And our guests this evening, we have a new voice, a lady that I worked with back in 2003 in an old funky project we called Mic Talk. Joining us from Springfield, Illinois is Rachel Schroeder. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
And originally from Orlando, Florida. Tell that story sometime, how you wrote me asking about how to get in radio when I don't know how old you were, like 14. And I
still have those tapes.
You do? Oh, wow. That'd be a flash down memory lane. I'd love to hear that. That would be awesome. I just kind of walked around the radio station and recorded everything I did. That would be awesome.
It was really cool.
Yeah, I like to hear
those
sometimes.
And now I do radio, so you had an influence.
Awesome. And you're on WNNS Sunday afternoons from noon to 4.
I am.
98.7, which they do have an internet stream, so we can all listen.
And yes, we do.
Also, our resident geek, Mr. Pete Bosley. Thanks for joining us this evening from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi, everybody.
Rare occasion, but we always love to have him here. Serotech CEO, Mr. Mike Calvo.
Yay! You know, I wonder what that means now. I wonder how your disclaimer at the top, how that applies to me.
That means what you say is your opinion and doesn't represent Serotech.
That's true, actually.
Why it's there. It's the infamous after podcast 49 that had so many outtakes, not to mention controversial statements that we were forever
changed. I didn't say one of them. Not one. I didn't say anything. It wasn't me.
Well, other than the NLS, but...
Oh, it wouldn't me. That wouldn't me. Plausible.
I was listening to that one, and I said to myself, I really wonder what the unedited one sounded like, and if this is what came out after it was edited, wow.
Dude, you got to hear the outtakes one day. This year's outtakes for 2010, we actually edited them down because they were just so crazy. And
yeah, a few things about hotel rooms and a few things we couldn't include.
And it's all Ricky's fault. It was all Ricky's fault. Rachel, it is so cool to have you here, sweetie.
Thank you.
You are just an inspiration. I love seeing blind folks out there doing it, blind women in radio and in technology. I mean, you just got it going on. I hate to sound like, what's his name from American Idol.
American Idol.
You don't sound like Steven Tyler yet, so.
No, not yet. I'm trying.
I paid him well to say that. No, it's good to be on here, Mike, another friend of mine from my old stomping grounds in Orlando, so.
Yes, and now I'm here in Orlando from MIA, and I love it up here. Welcome.
I didn't realize, because I didn't watch the show, that there was actually a blind gentleman named Scott, and I can't think of his last name now, that was on there and went quite a few rounds before being eliminated. I wish we could get him on, but he probably has to pay all kinds of royalties.
And it was Randy. Randy's the guy I'm talking about, because he said, girl, you got it going on, dog.
I got you.
Well.
Don't worry, you won't get me singing on Idol anytime soon.
On the screen, we have the link to the recently announced, recently released in the Mac App Store. It is DocuScan Plus for the Mac.
Yeah! That is so cool, man. As of a few minutes ago. I mean, literally a few minutes ago.
So, Mikey, what would you like to say about this?
I got nothing to say but congratulations to Pete and the team and the crowdsourcing folks that really helped us bring this together. Again, it's another first for Serotech. It's the first application on the Mac App Store for the blind. We did the first application on the iTunes or iPhone store in iBlink Radio, and now we did it with DocuScan Plus, and we're not finished. We've got things having to do with robots and droids and things of that nature coming around the corner here, so stay tuned. You know, it's going to be very
cool.
We're
really excited for this release. I just want to thank all the people that were involved. We had a group of people that helped us with the testing portion of this development cycle, and as always, the feedback was very valuable. You know, it's one thing for us as software designers to use an application and you get used to the way things are, but when you have end users come into the mix and they say, hey, you know, shouldn't this work like this? And you think to yourself, well, yeah, actually, it should.
Pete is not a Serotech employee. Pete is a user, just like everyone else. Obviously, a user with some skills in application development and management and things like that. And while he didn't code on this one, he ran the show pretty much when it came to making sure that the app stayed on track and all of that. Working with the Serotech team, to me, is one of the most exciting parts of this. Is where we as a company are reaching out to the community and working with the community to develop applications. This is a very exciting day, and thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm really excited. You can find us on Twitter and follow us. Go to serotalk.com and get a direct link there, or of course do a search in the Mac App Store for DocuScan Plus. That's DocuScan Plus. Or look for Serotech, and you will get it there. We remind you that you do need to register for DocuScan Plus at DocuScanPlus.com. And the cool thing about DocuScan is that you pay once for the service, so you have kind of your scanning and cloud service for storage, and then you have multiple points of access, that being the PC right now, the Mac, of course, and then other things will be coming down the pike as technology allows it, whether it be hardware or whatever. And we are finding some limitations in the iOS platform right now, unfortunately, when it looks like to me, at least so far, is that Android is probably going to make it out first. And that's because we don't have enough from Apple as far as being able to control the camera to get a decent amount of OCR. And we're not going to put something out just to say, we did it. You know, we really want it to work. But that's not written in stone yet. We're working with Apple. In fact, right before we got here, Pete said that he wrote a nice long letter to Apple requesting more granular support for the camera.
I don't know if there's other companies doing this where when you buy, you know, DocuScan Plus, it's cross-platform. So you can use it on the Windows, you can use it on Mac. Like, as you said, any other operating systems?
Yeah, it's the cloud. It's the whole cloud mindset. I mean, you know, the whole idea, and that's why we reach out and we develop. When you convert a document in DSP, you can send it to your Kindle, you can send it to Daisy, you can send it to Braille, you can send it to large print. There's a number of places where you can put it. It's all about even co-opetition. I think co-opetition is awesome. For those of you who haven't heard that term at all, it's people that are usually competing, but they also cooperate at a certain level. And Apple and Samsung with their recent little family squabbles. And of course, Apple being Samsung's biggest customer. Yet Apple has decided to sue Samsung recently just because they have a rectangular shape and rounded corners on their tablets.
If you look at the times today, it's only been very recently where we as blind individuals have been able to keep up with our sighted counterparts in the way of technology. You know, we're doing the same things on iPhone that our sighted counterparts are doing, and we're not having to wait for accessible software and tables to really turn it in. In some cases, we as blind individuals are ahead of our sighted counterparts. So it's really kind of an interesting time to be involved in the technology. And
what do you attribute that to? Why do you think that is?
I think, first off, there's an awareness. I think we as blind people kind of know what we want. We are probably a little bit better at communicating with the manufacturers as to what we want. The fact that Apple has made everything built in, you know, as far as voiceover, and that makes it so much easier. The back end doesn't really have to be programmed. So there's just a lot of things in the way of technology that have made it easier to keep up with our sighted.
Yeah, I think blind people are also finally realizing, I mean, we've been, of course, you know, agitating for change for years, but I think that, and I don't mean to get on the Serotech soapbox here. This is certainly not about Serotech. It's just, you know, you got to call a spade a spade. Serotech is the leader in that area in this industry where we have continuously raised the bar for, you know, demanding equal access. And we've held the feet of mainstream companies to the fire. And we've also agitated our own community to say, you know, get up off your behinds and say something, blind person, because if not, the world's going to run you over. And I think that we're actually all starting to see the fruit of that. And it really doesn't matter who started it. I mean, we did. That's just a historical fact.
You know, I met you about 6 years ago. You predicted some of this back then, and I kind of went, I don't know about that.
Yeah, Mikey, well, is the soothsayer. We'll be curious. Sometime we'll have to get your thoughts on where we will be in 2020.
Blind visionary. It's hilarious. My board calls me the blind visionary. It's not, people. You know, I'll tell you something. There is absolutely no magic to what I do. All I do is watch mainstream, you know, trends and say, I want that. I'm a blind person, but I want that. And I don't accept the fact that we're a small audience. I don't accept the fact that we're a minority. I don't accept any of that crap, because at the end of the day, my money in my pocket is just as green as everybody else's. And I believe that, you know, that if I get up and I open my mouth and I gripe, God knows, you know, if there's a group of people that are experts at bitching and complaining, is us. You know, we all do it so well. And I mean that with all, I'm smiling. I say that with a big old grin, because I mean, look, the squeaky wheel gets the oil, dude. And we have really been able to get the oil. Everybody from Microsoft to Adobe to even Google to a certain degree, although I don't believe that the latest innovations in Android have very much to do with Google, unfortunately. But you know, ultimately, again, Google started it. And you know, and we started things, but it's you, the consumer, it's me, the consumer, not just the AT companies that keep it going. So if I could say anything, and that is just to encourage each and every person to realize that, you know, it's like the Chinese water torture, you know, or the death by a thousand cuts, you know, it's accessibility by a thousand tweets or calls or gripes or whatever. You know, make sure you get out there and you let your voice be heard. Don't just let the NFB or the ACB or any other blindness organization speak for you. You have a voice. You have a dollar to spend, and you have the right to decide where that dollar goes and how it's spent.
And let's get into some of these tech stories before we.
Yeah, I want to make sure we do that. I was going to segue here and say, we can never forget the power that one person can make. 20 tech chats ago, in Tech Chat 79, I had Deanne Chapman on, and just one person just saving hundreds, over the course of her life, thousands of dogs, because that was her passion.
Man.
And yeah, she died a week ago today, and I just found out Tuesday. And she really altered my view on just advocacy and just the difference that one person can make. So really think again when you think, because Mike, I hear people say the very opposite. Well, we're too small of a group.
No.
We're too much of a minority. And people, we have to get away from that mindset. We really do.
I just want to remind people that anything that's ever happened, even the Revolutionary War in this country, was fought by only 2 or 3% of the people. You know, so it really is a small minority usually that makes the difference. It's just, it's like that pebble in your shoe, man. It just doesn't go away. So,
well, anyway, let's get into the stories we've outlined here. The first one, researchers, the folks that are upset with the Apple's location tracking built into iOS 4. Actually, it was announced before April, but it really hit the mainstream press. Pete, do you want to talk about this, exactly what this means, what can be done?
So there was a lot of sensationalism about this particular item, and I don't disagree that this was a bad move on Apple's part, but I don't think it was as big a deal as it was made out to be in the press. So essentially, what has happened here is, as you travel around with your phone, or 3G enabled iPad, the operating system keeps a record of cell sites and information related to Wi-Fi access points in your general vicinity. This information is cached on your device to assist in making a location lock quicker. If Apple relied on the GPS chip in their device to create a location lock every time instead of using some of the cached information, it would take a lot longer. Unfortunately,
they've been doing this since 1996, just in the cellular business at all. I mean, a carrier can track where you are all over the country, even on a regular old phone, circa 1999 or something.
Right, and that's another thing. You know, this information is available to the carrier anyway. The issue that people were seeing is that as your device was backed up to your computer, this cache was copied to your computer in an unencrypted file. So theoretically, if someone had access to your hard drive, they could create a map of general vicinities that you had been in the last year. Now, Apple has stated publicly that they did not mean to keep this information for that long. They wanted it to be more like 7 days instead of a year. But you know, whether that's true or not, it wasn't the security snafu that everybody seemed to think it was.
So what?
And conversely, of course, everybody said Google does it too, and of course Microsoft with Windows Phone 7 does it, and I'm sure that HP didn't say anything, but I'm sure they do too, and BlackBerry does too. So, you know, come on, get a life.
Well, here's my concern. I guess now, if I understand this, and correct me if I'm wrong. So there's this file created called consolidated.db. And not hard to get to. It's in basically any phone that's synced, right? With
No. It is hard to get to. You have to root your phone, or you have to be able to poke around in the phone OS to get it.
That's not necessarily true, Mike. See, the thing is that, yes, to access the file from your device on iOS, you would have to be jailbroken. A regular application couldn't just gain access to it since it was stored in a secure area.
Right,
on the phone.
It could be seen on the PC too. No, I feel you. I'm just saying that on the phone itself, no, it can't be just gotten at.
No, yeah, definitely.
Right, so my question is, if you could get to this on the PC, and I assume there's some website, because what you have is longitude and latitudinal coordinates, right? So you could go to some website and reverse these values
they're approximate areas. I mean, they're recording Wi-Fi APs and cell sites that you're near. So, you know, your cell phone tower could be 2-3 miles away from
you. You know what they're doing that for, though? They're doing it for Skynet, man. I mean, are you familiar with the Skynet project where they're trying to, you know, basically use these Wi-Fi networks as alternatives to GPS?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
I can see people's concern, but I don't really think, like you said, Peter, I think that They have that information anyway. It's on your. The only difference here is that it's captured on your phone and it's saved. Big deal. I don't care if people know where I go. I'm not that worried about it. You know, I can see where people would have a privacy concern, but I think once they knew that it was not going to be that easily accessible, I don't see that there's really that much of a problem with it.
Yeah, can you say 911? I mean,
and let me tell you, folks.
Well, that's the thing is, if you turn these things off, they're not going to find you for 911. Sorry, Pete. Go ahead.
Well, no, they can find you for 911. 911's the E911 system uses a lock based on the carrier's information, so it wouldn't matter if you turn location services off.
Oh, okay.
But the point is that if I have access to your Mac or your PC hard drive where you sync your iTunes library too, you've got bigger problems.
Apple hit with the class action suit over the in-app game purchases. And what I want to ask you again here, Pete, is what did they change?
So Apple basically tightened up the restrictions on in-app purchases. So now, you know, things should require a password every time.
Don't you think it would really be better to have a separate password for purchases?
You know, I think that's risky because what you have there is people will forget that password too, or they'll, you know, they'll give someone that password. Or I think the one password method is fine. I think they just need to allow parental controls on in-app purchases or something like that, which actually I think I saw in 4.3 they changed that.
Did you study anything about this Wear a Braille, the virtual wireless keyboard?
I watched the video, and it actually looks really cool, but it'll be interesting to see if they make that into an actual product. It looked like it was very much prototype stage, but I thought it was a great...
That thing is just so freaking cool, to be able to whip out a pair of gloves and just, like, you know, tap anywhere and be able to type is just so... It's so futuristic.
I was trying to track down the people that put that video out because I wanted to know some of the technical details behind that, but I never did catch up with them.
I want one. I want a pair. I mean, those are cool, but I don't know how much they cost. Were they real expensive?
It's a prototype. They haven't actually developed anything. I mean, that was their proof of concept.
It can't be that expensive if you think about it. I mean, it really there isn't much. There can't be much to it.
No, I mean, they kind of said they built most of it with off the shelf stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if you even think this is a story, but I think this is good for apps like iBlink Radio that are used over and over again, where Apple changed their app's ranking criteria to basically things that are used multiple times, like Facebook, Netflix. Obviously, they would get a higher ranking because it's not just the number of downloads, but actual real-world usage.
Well, I think that one of the things that Apple's going to ultimately have to do, and I think that goes for Android as well, and as much as I'm not into Blind Ghetto, I do believe there needs to be an accessibility section in these app stores where people can go, sort of like the eyes free type of thing on Android, but a little less Kool-Aid-ish from the developer of the OS and a little more community oriented, you know. I think that at that point, then you'll see kind of, I guess if you look at it in the ranks of like Amazon does, well, this is the top seller in this rank and in this, and it drills down into where it really is the top seller. You know, it's the 16,000th overall app, but the number 10 app in this, in the number one app in that category, in that micro category. So, you know, but I don't know. I mean, I think people that use iBlink Radio or any other iOS or App Store type of thing, they go looking for it. I don't think that they just browse and run into it.
Yeah, the browsing on the Apple App Store especially is difficult just because of the sheer number of things. So their app discovery method needs work.
Now, I thought I saw a Twitter post saying that there is a special education system or AT or for education. Mac apps or something. I have to go investigate that.
I know we're in education. We are in education somewhere, and because I remember Matt asking me where I thought we should put it, but there is nothing specific for AT. I'd love to see that because I think that Serotech should focus on creating some smaller apps, especially when you see Lion coming forward. I think that there's a market not only for Serotech but for entrepreneurial blind folks to create small, you know, $5 and $10 applications, even if it's just to do common things like what Christopher Toth did with Pandora, which sucks. They just blocked him, and not only him but others.
Oh, wait, Hope doesn't work anymore?
I don't think so.
They changed their login method, so he's working on it. He said that he's gonna have it soon.
I got so much admiration for that dude, man. He is just amazing. He's an amazing young man. Quitter is a great product, and I'm real excited to see what life is going to do with him.
I second you on that one. He is a really cool guy.
Yes, let's look at the Android stuff here. The first story: haptic GPS shoes. Basically, Mikey, this uses an Android phone and runs Google Maps. Okay. And then uses a Bluetooth device to communicate with the shoes. Tell you left, right, up, and down. And we were kind of joking about it in the podcast, like three triple, you know, taps on the ground means take me home. But I don't know. I mean, would you replace a cane or a dog with shoes that have motors that kind of?
Rachel, what do you think? I want to hear.
I don't have Rachel, unfortunately, and I don't know that I can get her back because she wasn't an actual contact as a phone call.
Oh,
I can
see.
Try here. That was what I was trying to get her, and that was causing the problem.
Oh, well, what do you think, Pete? I think it's hilarious.
I don't know. Maybe I'm too traditionalistic in my mobility orientation mobility approach, but I just don't know if I think that that's really going to take off at all.
Now, it sounds like something that a sighted person invented and said, blind people would like this. You know, but first of all, what happens when those, you know, their haptic feedback, which means they vibrate, you know, they got to be big old clunky clown shoes for the batteries.
That's kind of what I wondered. I mean, better, you know, there was an alternate to this as well that was an actual hard hat.
let me walk into my job interview and say, oh, well, excuse my shoes. They're just my blind shoes.
Yeah. BS, blind shoes.
I love it. That's the name for the podcast. They're just my blind shoes.
Okay, two questions in this next story talking about using Google Goggles to help the blind see was the way the article was written. So, two questions then. Actually, I need to back up because I wanted to ask about Google Maps. And you had expressed a real concern that we cannot use Navigon on Android, and we have the email address for people to email them. But what can we not do in Google Maps? Why do we need Navigon? What added functionalities, points of interest, or what, Mikey, do we need that to do?
Well, I think Navigon provides, first of all, Navigon provides a similar experience. If you've got Navigon on iOS and you want to use it on Android, you should. You should be able to, and that concerns me. Navigon also, it's the business to them. They continually update that application. They add new bells and whistles. It's got traffic information. I mean, no matter how you cut it, Android is still kludgy. I have actually switched over my personal phone to an Epic 4G from Sprint. I love the phone. I love the flexibility. That doesn't mean that there aren't gaping holes in being able to use Android, but I'm a geek and I like playing with bleeding edge technology that may or may not work. So that doesn't bother me, but I think that a consistent user experience across platforms is extremely important. And Google Maps, I guess tit for tat, Google Maps is not very accessible on iOS, and Android, and Navigon is not very accessible on Android. So, you know, I don't particularly like Google Maps on Android. I've gotten used to it. It's kind of something I've gotten used to using, but I'd love to be able to use my Navigon. It doesn't bother me, and it's just a matter of wanting to use it. It's not nothing else to it. I mean, sure, you know, Google Maps is free and it works, but I like my Navigon. It's a brand I trust. I like it as a consumer, and I don't mind paying $55 for it if it's accessible. Now, I did pay $55 for it, and it wasn't accessible. In their defense, though, they are very quick to respond, especially to the blind community. They've been very helpful in the past. I'm sure that Navigon will do so again.
So on the subject here of this article, usability of Google Goggles to help for Android to help the blind see, is Google Goggles accessible so you can actually go out and do crowdsourcing and take pictures of things and have it come back and tell you what they are?
I've never used it.
You never played with it? Okay.
Never.
Nothing else we can ask about that, but I'll be curious. Resources at serotalk.com. It was interesting. We talked about this in the podcast, some things that it cannot detect, like things that are out of their packaging. You know, things like purses and shoes and things that I would assume many of them would have insignias. I mean, they have the product name written on many of them. You know, I don't know, but certainly.
I'd love to see somebody do a demo for us, like for the podcast. Send us a demo.
Yeah. Skype on Android. Apparently, they've the latest version. Make sure it works on all carriers. Have you played with it, either Wi-Fi or 3G? Some of our users in the chat rooms had said that there was still some dropped calls and issues of breakup. Have you played with Skype on there, Mike?
I've had some pretty good experiences with Skype. I mean, the problem that the one thing that I found with Skype is that once you get into a phone call, you it won't talk. You know, now I don't know if that's because I'm using mobile accessibility. You know, the thing that's really weird on Android, and I'm hoping that will change, is that you really need to know what to use with what. If you're using this program, Spiel will work better with it. If you use that, TalkBack will work better with it. If you use that, then mobile accessibility. I mean, you got to have to remember these things. And again, I caution anyone that is going to jump into the Android platform. It is not for the light, you know, for the light person who wants, you know, who wants to turn their device on and it works. It does take some kicking of the tires, but at the end of the day, it's much more flexible than the iOS platform. I still use iOS. I still use an iPad for entertainment. I use my iPod for reading books and stuff. But when it comes to my phone, I love what the Android does so far, and it still doesn't do everything. Once it gets fully accessible, I think it's going to be one of the most amazing phones I've ever had. And not because it's Android, just because it's so darn flexible.
Let me ask you, you mentioned this in the town hall meeting, Serotech, a few weeks ago, and a new version of this Cyanogen mod, or version 7. Can you explain what does Cyanogen do for Android, and what do you think potential it might open up for us in terms of accessibility?
Sure. Well, Android, unlike iOS, where Apple controls every aspect of the user experience from the ground up, they build the operating system and install it and lock it down, and have tried to even go to court for people doing what's called jailbreaking on iOS devices to be able to get what they call root access to the operating system and be able to install their own apps, or even little things, stupid things like being able to change the sounds that you use for when text messages come in or whatever. Android is an open source operating system, which means that any carrier, any manufacturer of hardware can just go download this operating system, build hardware for it, and without ever consulting with Google at all, just put it out into the marketplace. Now, there is an opportunity for Google to bless the project, and there are some hoops they have to jump through for that. But what happened was, at first, when in the early days of Android, it was very difficult to put what they call alternate ROMs or alternate versions of Android onto these devices, onto devices that you would just buy from your carrier. Recently, in the last few months or so, it's become a lot easier. And the Cyanogen project is what they call an alternative ROM that gives you the ability to do things to your phone that would not normally be possible, but at the operating system level. So what it means is that, for example, Serotek or any other company can do certain changes, patches to the operating system itself. So, for example, and if I sound a little geeky, I apologize, but we could create an accessibility layer for the GUI toolkit, for the GUI toolkit used in the operating system. And we could submit that to the main repository at the Cyanogen site. It could be included in the major distribution of it. And every time somebody runs this Cyanogen mod on their commercially purchased phone, the accessibility stuff would be there. Why is this so important to us? Well, because it puts control back in the hands of the people. And yes, while I agree with Jeff Bishop and Kevin Chow and many, many others and myself as well, that I agree that Android should do its part in making accessibility available from the, you know, from the ground up. They've done it to a certain degree. They've just demonstrated this is how it works. And if you want to make it better, well, here's the tools and go do it. With CyanogenMod, that brings that to fruition. It brings it to reality. And I'm very excited because I do see that Cyanogen is interested in discussing accessibility. I know that the guys from Spiel have talked to them, and they're very excited about incorporating Spiel and that kind of thing into Cyanogen. The one thing that I am a little disappointed about Cyanogen 7 is that it's not available for the Epic, which is what the phone I use, which is, you know, really sad. Insert sad trombone here. There you go. But you know, it is what it is. But I think that it's very exciting because as we start to see Android in more and more devices, be it set-top boxes or other devices, we can actually look forward to some innovative young person or geek really taking it on upon themselves to make it a Cyanogen mod version ROM that will run on this device and make it accessible without ever having to discuss it with the device manufacturer. So this is very cool.
Yeah,
long-winded explanation.
All right, a lot of other stories here. I don't know which ones we want to go into, depending upon your knowledge on some of these things. We have a story here about a new eye tracking tablet that's been developed for about a fifth of the price of things like Tobii PCI for about $1,500. Still more than we'd like to spend, I'm sure. But I want to ask you about this one, Mike. This was talking about testing websites. I'll ask you and Pete about this. Testing websites for accessibility for screen readers. And I know there's people in many states. I mean, that's all they do. That's their job, is to test sites for accessibility. But the biggest thing that grabbed my attention here is it looks like all of them, I don't say all of them, but it looks like they were saying, well, you need to test with JAWS and NVDA. These are the only two pieces of access screen reading technology out there. I didn't see anything for the Mac. We didn't see SA to go, Window Eyes, anything else. So it leaves me with this, well, it's accessible with one screen reader that we decided to use, or we got some orientation to, and maybe the other five or six options out there don't work, or maybe those options do, but that's not what we tested with, so it doesn't work. It's not accessible.
Yeah, but in all fairness, though, dude, I mean, you know, the reality is NVDA, not JAWS so much, because JAWS plays God with a lot of your experience, okay? And they always have. I mean, they do everything from rerouting what the enter key does to everything else. But let me tell you, you can't get much more vanilla than NVDA. And, you know, NVDA does a great job. Those guys are awesome. That's a great product. And let me tell you, I mean, if it had a better support infrastructure and things like that, I think that it would be a worthy competitor in this space. But it doesn't, so it's not. But the fact of the matter is that if they're testing it with NVDA, and if Serotek and GW Micro and Apple are doing things right and following the standards, then it should be just as accessible. I mean, yeah, it's a little bit of a kick in the teeth to be here for 10 years like Serotek's been and still not be recognized as a leading provider of screen reading technology, which I think that we are, and nobody can take that away from us. But hey, you know, it is what it is. We are, you know, we are in shark infested waters, and that's not and I can't say that that's Freedom Scientific's fault. I would more attribute that to lazy government bureaucrats that don't want to hear anything else because, heaven forbid, they actually do some work for our tax dollars.
Mike's absolutely right, and I'll preface this by saying that what I'm about to say is my personal opinion and does not reflect the opinions of anybody I work for. But
go ahead.
The government is kind of like that. Government agencies and universities and big places like that, you know, the there's a lot of momentum there. People use JAWS. They like JAWS. There's people around that refuse to hear of anything else. And since they're not paying for this stuff out of their pocket or they don't see it coming out of their own pocket, they just don't care how much it costs. As far as the web accessibility stuff goes, we use NVDA and VoiceOver as baseline testing, basically because they do a minimum of what I call propping up issues. Yes. With web browsers and standards. So if something works in NVDA and works in VoiceOver, you're going to be hard-pressed to find it not working in another screen reader, and actually unless it's JAWS.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I mean, the reality is, look, you know, from a business perspective, and we've had many discussions about this in marketing meetings, you know, we face the same problems GW Micro has faced and even Apple faces to a certain degree when it comes to screen readers. I mean, JAWS, Freedom Scientific products are the AT&T of our the IBM of our community. And, you know, no one has ever been fired at a corporate level for hiring, for using an AT&T or an IBM product. You know, it's a standard that everybody knows, and it's the devil, you know, literally in many respects, but it's the devil, you know, and that when it blows up, well, that's just JAWS being JAWS again. But if they bought System Access or if they bought GW Micro, what the hell are you doing? That new product that you brought in here, it blew up. Forget about if JAWS blows up just as many times. So, you know, as much as I like to throw rocks at the competition like anybody else does, you know, I don't believe that this is some dastardly plan put together by our friends over in St. Petersburg. It just is what it is. And Pete's absolutely right. You know, when you can just sign a requisition and JAWS is already the contracted product, you know, states don't want to hear anything else. And that's why we're pushing so much for consumer choice, because when you look at things like what's going on in Texas, where DARS is disappearing, and Ranger tweeted about this earlier this week, where DARS is disappearing, man. They're getting rid of it. They're integrating the Division of Blind Services in Texas into the Department of Labor. That means that the consumer needs to have more choice, because if not, you're going to just get JAWS, and that's it. And for a lot of people, that is not a right fit. It's not that JAWS is a bad product. It's just that not everybody can use it. When it takes you 20 hours to learn to send a stinking email, that's not for everybody.
The reality of the situation really is that we have to get to a point where we start buying our own assistive technology. I bought my own system access licenses. I didn't have anybody pay for those for me.
Now, even with Freedom, I think if you're using a Freedom Scientific product in a corporate environment and you're making $30,000, $40,000, $25,000 a year, whatever it is, you know, buy it, for heaven's sakes. I mean, it is your key to work. It is what you're using. Why the heck are you going to put that burden on your employer? You know, and we can argue about it's the law and everything else. But you know what? You know, you're the blind guy. You're the blind gal. You know, you don't expect them to pay for your guide dog or your cane, do you? You know, and you know, if they're giving you the computer, the least you can do is make the darn thing talk. And that's why we really focus on giving people economical solutions. We know that there's a 70% to 80% unemployment rate amongst the blind. That's why we provide a myriad of different payment options. But if you are gainfully employed, buy your own technology. Stop depending on the government. If you need training, go to the government. But otherwise, buy your own stuff.
or my view has always been, even if you're going to get that assistance from the government, you pay a certain percentage of it yourself so that you at least now make a conscious decision whether you spend $1,200 or $399.
Good luck making that happen.
Yeah, I know. But well, I mean, they already do it in you know, in the welfare systems now. They have to pay $3 for each of their prescriptions and stuff. It sounds small, but it's, you know, at least they had to pay. They had to give some involvement. Whereas if something's handed to you for free, like you said, no cost, no concern as to what it is, where it comes from.
So back to the web accessibility stuff. I don't see such a problem with testing websites based on VoiceOver and NVDA. I don't think that's a slight against Serotec or GW or anybody, really.
It's JAWS and NVDA. So it's, you know, the Apple thing isn't even popping up on the radar.
Right. So that was what got my attention, because they certainly are making inroads, and I don't know, I'd just be curious to see, you know, where this is going to go. I've seen these lawsuits claiming that it's not accessible and waiting for one of these days someone to go, but it is with this product. But anyway, moving on to some other stories. One of these, it sounds like good intentions, but some government involvement here. Maybe something's better than nothing. But the FCC, with their first ever program to try to give better accessibility to the deafblind community, and starting out with a big $50,000 per state for internet access and various telecommunication services. I'm not sure how many clients you're going to cover with $50,000, but it's too bad we lost Rachel. I'd certainly like to hear her take on that and how they determine who gets that. Is the person who speaks the loudest?
What are you talking about? $50,000 isn't even going to cover their initial research phase.
Michael, that's patronizing, man. Who speaks the loudest and is deafblind people? How insensitive of you. I'm messing with you, dude.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're family members, whatever the case. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know.
I know what you're saying, bro. I just felt like picking on you, but no. I mean, you're right. $50,000 for it's just insignificant. It really is. It's insignificant.
Now, granted, I guess there was a total of 10 million, so maybe at some point that will go. But even that, even if, you know, unless it's done by population, you're still talking. Okay, what if do it like the Senate and divide it by 50? It's $200,000. Well, okay, still you take care of a few people who make the most noise, and again, maybe their family members, whatever. But I don't know. I thought it was an interesting story, and it's just one of many things you're going to see these mandates and dictates coming down from the FCC over this whole 21st century Communications and Accessibility Act. So that's why I mentioned that. But anything getting your attention in mainstream, just a general mainstream technology that you think was big in April? I just didn't. This month didn't really rock me with new innovations and.
I think that tablets are getting to be a big deal. I'm really excited. I've got a couple of things that I'm going to pop up in Serotalk podcasts. I've got some Bluetooth keyboards for the iOS, for the iPhone that I want to talk about. I've been playing with those for a couple months. There's a new Bluetooth headset out by the Jawbone people that I'll be reviewing soon, and just sticking my head out the window of the car again, Michael. And there's these tablets. I'm real excited about these Android tablets because of what they mean for us as blind people. And again, going back to the Cyanogen mod and stuff, you know, you've got like the EEE slider from Asus that's going to be released. It's a 7-inch tablet with a QWERTY keyboard. Wait for somebody to come out with a very interesting Cyanogen mod version or whatever that's totally accessible, that does the same as your $3,000 blind ghetto device. It's going to be very exciting to watch the market coming ahead. So I haven't seen anything yet, but I see some things coming down the pike that are very interesting to me, and that I'm pretty excited about. I love this move that everybody's making towards LTE. Is very intriguing to me as well.
Well, I have a few different stories here talking about. I'm not going to go into each one, but just get a general overview, Mikey, on your thoughts on this. Do you think some people get so obsessed with restoring vision that they really forget to make the most out of the quality of life that they have? I mean, these are stories like when the blind can suddenly see. You know, do they know what they're looking at? Well, that one did intrigue me, actually. But using algae to treat blindness, and the FDA clears the first telescope implant, which sounds bizarre enough to me. And, of course, one of your favorites, Mikey, that we got some real love mail over was seeing with your tongue.
You know, look, I have said before, and I'll say it again, and this is my personal opinion and not the people I work for. But you know, my biggest problem with my blindness has been how other people perceive it, never the way that I deal with it. I think that that goes for a lot of people. From a spiritual point of view, I've never seen any writing in the world, you know, Judeo-Christian or otherwise, that has talked about blindness as an affliction from a creator or as a punishment from a creator or as a sickness of any kind. Every time I've looked at any scriptural or writing of that kind, it has always shown that it is society's way of treating a blind individual that makes that individual want their sight. And I think that that was prevalent thousands of years ago. It's still prevalent today. I think that we need to continue to educate. We need to continue to narrow the gap, the digital divide between us and the sighted community. We need to be patient and understand that a lot of sighted people, you're the only blind person they're going to meet. You need to stop. You need to talk to them. You need to understand that they are ignorant. They're not stupid. There's a big difference between ignorance and stupid. And when you run into an ignorant sighted person, you need to educate them because they sincerely want to know you. And that's important. And I've been guilty of being brash and carrying a huge brick on my shoulder towards sighted people and their opinions of me in the past. And I've just realized in the last 10 years while being a part of this company and being a part of this community that we have really come a long way because we've stopped and found the things that we do have in common and use those as a springboard to educate each other about what we don't have in common and how we do things. So I do think that it's a bit obsessive, compulsive. What do you think, Pete?
I meet a lot of people, and I think that you're right, Mike, that in a lot of cases, you're the only blind person that person has come across yet and maybe ever will. It is very difficult, don't get me wrong. It's an isolating thing in a lot of ways, but I think that it's important for us as individuals to accept ourselves as we are.
When you ran into a situation recently, Pete, that you were telling me about where, you know, you have your blindness is not very evident, and someone, one of your colleagues, was actually shocked to hear that you were blind. You know,
yeah, he called me and he said, you know, after a meeting, he said, my colleague came up to me and said that you're blind, and I told her that that's not possible. You know, he looks off to the side a little ways, but there's no way that he can't see. I've been in several meetings with him, and I had to tell him.
He's a little cockeyed, but he ain't blind. Sorry.
Oh, you got to love it. A few questions here. We did, Mike Arrigo did say that Google Goggles, once you take the picture, it does read you the results just with many unlabeled buttons on the screen.
There you go. I figured Mike would know.
Yeah, yeah. he also says, though, he can't hear any more audio on accessible events, so we will assume that's just him at this point. Thank God for MP3s.
I can still hear it.
Okay, so.
Thank God for archives.
Yeah, thank God for archives. One of the stories that concerned me, I don't know, but this whole concept of, this was a company called SWCast, and what you do basically is you pay them a monthly fee. Many folks who have radio stations on the internet pay them a monthly fee, and it's their job to pay Sound Exchange, you know, which is set up, you know, by the Library of Congress to make sure that the artists get their entitled fees, you know, for their tunes and so forth. But this service was actually shut down because they did not pay their royalties. But the thing that got my attention is it claims they haven't paid them since 2005. So wait a minute, you're going to wait 5.5, 6 years, and now all of a sudden you're going to decide to go after them. And it's just very disconcerting for folks, you know, who put radio stations on the air and assume that all is well. And then you find out, well, geez, the last 28 months, you quite possibly haven't been legal, and your company hasn't done anything for 5 or 6 years.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No, I don't think they're going to go after the small broadcasters, but... Yeah. I can't tell you, even for Samnet Radio, I had to go through some paperwork today. I guess I'm just trying to say we need to make sure, not just make assumptions, that these entities, these third-party companies that we're working with, are doing what we're actually paying them to do.
I mean, what do you propose? I mean, if they say they're doing it, then they've got to be doing it, right? I mean, you can't what are you going to do? You know, unfortunately, I mean, I hate to be American reactive, but that's just the way the cookie crumbles. I mean, if you're paying somebody every month to, quote, do a job, you shouldn't have to be babysitting to make sure they're doing it. That's what they're doing it for. That's what they, you know, they, like you said, they've been in business since 2005. That's a heck of a long time in internet years, man. I mean, you know, that is what it is. And I don't think the RIAA, as weird and tripped out as they are, has the balls to go after any small broadcaster after seeing, you know, after that.
You better believe they're going to come down on those guys like a ton of bricks.
Oh, hell yeah. And as well they should. As well they should. You know, I don't agree with most of the RIAA's draconian ways of doing things, you know, lawsuits for millions of dollars against, you know, nice little ladies from Minnesota and stuff like that. But in this particular case, yeah, I think they should jump on them with both feet and jump up and down several times. That's just wrong. And
what about nice little guys from Orlando, Florida?
Now, they never did anything to me. The RIAA never did anything to me. But me personally. But I mean, why? You know anybody else from Orlando they did stuff to?
No. I was just joking with you.
Well, interesting comment here. Josh Loya said that in martial arts class, I had taught students who did not believe I was blind, and then when you shatter their preconceptions, they often did not know what to say.
Yeah. Here I'm going to shatter your face and your preconceptions.
We'll do it all in one shot. I guess we're about to ready to wrap up, but we already saw previews here of IE10, Internet Explorer 10, that will not only not work on Windows XP, but also will not work on Windows Vista. And this came up in the users forum on Samnet this week about how long are you going to support Windows XP? And it's, you know, obviously I can't give an answer there. Others say Microsoft supposedly supporting it through 2014, but
I won't give an answer.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, we just don't know what when Microsoft themselves decides, hey, we're not really going to support it anymore, and we're going to come up with new products, new Windows Live Messengers, and new Internet Explorers and things that are not going to be backward compatible. At some point, yeah, we'll give you updates. We'll make sure it's secure. We'll try to block mean and nasty things from happening within reason. But, you know, it's always the age-old question.
I think our attitude, all kidding aside about from what I said before, I won't talk. I will answer. And that is that we will continue to support it as long as it makes financial sense for us. When it doesn't, we won't. I mean, and that's it. And we won't apologize for it. We keep our prices low because at some point, you know, we don't support Office 2003 anymore. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's you know, it just doesn't happen. You know, if it works, if it happens to work, if System Access happens to work with Office 2003, woohoo! Okay. If you report a bug to us and it takes us half an hour of development time to fix it, woohoo! We'll fix it. But if it's something where we've got to sacrifice current usability on a modern platform for this legacy junk, sorry guys, but you know, it's when you can buy a new computer for $300, you know, I'd rather you know, have somebody go spend their $300 and come back and get a good user experience than give you a half-baked experience trying to rig what's already been broken and what Microsoft has already decided is out the window anyway.
Hey, and look, people, enterprises are some of the slowest moving people to upgrade, and we're even starting to see Windows 7 roll out there. So XP is going to go, and it's going to go sooner rather than later.
Yep. And not to mention the fact that, I mean, and there is no excuse for not upgrading things like your browser and stuff. I mean, I've had many discussions and many debates, even with our friends up in Canada, about because they like to run IE6. You know,
IE6 has enough holes for me to drive a truck through.
Well, but they were running it forever and got very, very uptight, about us saying we're just not going to work with it. They finally changed things, I believe. It was just the way it was. So, you know, sooner or later, it's got to go. You got to upgrade your hardware and your software. And quite candidly, we as a company, Serotech, I mean, are not concerned with if you can't afford to upgrade your Freedom Scientific product. Too bad, you're never going to pay for an upgrade from us. You know, you're going to always have, you're going to pay for your product once. And when the new operating system comes, we're always going to work with it. And we're not going to charge you to be able to do that. So, you know, pick your company and stick with it.
Well, it's no different than when people had to upgrade their TV. I mean, hey, we're going HD and that's where it's going. And obsolete hardware. Sorry, that's what it is. So I got, you know, good answer. You heard it here. Support as long as it's feasible to do so. That's going to put the wraps on it. We certainly invite you to join us next week, May 5th, our Tech Chat 100. We'll give you details on what we're going to do. But
Cinco de Mayo! Woohoo!
Yes.
Man, I'm bringing my tequila. No, actually, I don't drink anymore.
Well, do you do anything special on 5-5?
Oh, yes, I do. I love Cinco de Mayo, man. I go and I'll have a beer or something. I'll go have a Corona and a burrito somewhere or something and just sit outside and just, when I was younger and crazier, Cinco de Mayo was just a party experience that I rarely remembered. But as I get older and my kids are watching what dad is doing and that kind of thing, I'll have a beer or something. But I still love the holiday. It's a great time. And what a great
are you
day.
doing your pig roast still?
No, the pig roast not on the Cinco de Mayo. That's on December 24th, man. That's Noche Buena.
I missed that. I need to fly out for that one time.
Dude, come on down, man. There's plenty.
No chuena. All right. Well,
we'll throw you in the pool.
Yeah, Pete, make sure your pockets are empty, buddy. Any electronics or cash currency or any craziness like that, because you never know where you're going to end up at the Cowboy Crew.
Hey, man, if I was down there partying, all my electronics would stay somewhere else. I'd be there for the party.
There you go.
Well, thanks, Pete and Mike and Rachel for your participation. Sorry, I couldn't bring you back in here, but
she's got to come back, man. She's just awesome.
Yeah, bring her back because she was cool.
Yeah, we definitely will invite her in for future. We do this at the end of every month, so stay tuned. We'll have good prizes and the latest and greatest information, of course, serotalk.com.
This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.